This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I'm Seth Payne. I played in the NFL for a few years. I'm joined by my, I almost said sometimes co-host, but he's turning into a pretty regular affair. Drew Hodgdon played in the NFL for a few years as well. He was a center. I was a nose tackle. We used to do battle during training camp and whatnot. Is that a fair way to put it, Drew?
Yeah, it started out as doing battle, and then it just turned into pretending to do battle. Well, we actually just maintained a friendship.
You got to work on your stuff. Well, it's training camp, which means it's time for Hard Knocks. And I'm on a sometimes on again, off again love affair with Hard Knocks. I think in any given year, I'll watch the first episode and I'll figure out whether I'm going to watch it again. So we both watched the Dallas Cowboys version of Hard Knocks this year, 2021. Are you going to watch it again? Will we be talking about it again?
I think you summed up your view of Hard Knocks is mine as well. That's the exact same sentiment. It's sort of a, because it's a piece of content that's designed for people who obviously haven't played, very often have not played football at all. So It's trying to be accessible, I think, to general fans, and it's trying to make it a little more salacious, I think, than maybe sometimes it's always intended to be. It's just kind of overly produced for me anyway, as a former player.
The overly produced part. And that's where it gets, I feel that I'm like this with all reality television. You start looking for the parts where you say, oh, okay, the producers had them do that. Like Zeke Elliott wrapping a present for Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
And like the HBO producers aren't even disguising it. It's like, oh yeah, this is actually the first time I've ever wrapped a present. This is the first time I've ever exchanged presents with Dak Prescott. And by the way, Dak Prescott shows up in the middle of me wrapping the present. Oh, okay. So like every aspect of this was produced. It's hard to enjoy like that part. They try to make training camp look a lot more interesting, I guess, than it actually is.
They do. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, the thing that I appreciated, and I obviously am very biased just based on my own, you know, standing when I was playing, and I guess yours to some extent, you know, not that, I mean, you had a really long career, but it's not like you were, you know, top 10 pick or a quarterback or anything like that. So I appreciated they did spend a lot of time, I felt like, in past years focusing on sort of the blue collar kind of middle of the road guys who were on the cusp. And I thought that's like, there's a lot of interesting storylines there.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm going to go back to be watching this season.
This is going to be all about star power and ratings. And I mean, if you look at, I guess the most nondescript player that had any serious screen time would be Micah Parsons, who was their first round draft pick.
So right. It's not like
he's a nobody. It's just not as many people know him as Jerry Jones, Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott. I mean, those were the three main guys, and Mike McCarthy, I suppose.
Well, it is. And I mean, I think, doesn't that like speak to what the value prop is as a franchise for the Cowboys? Like the Cowboys are much more invested in creating a dramatic reality show of a team than they are generally in putting out a good product on the field. I mean, whether that's intentionally or not, that's
what I
like.
Found fascinating about this, though, and I think I'm probably going to end up watching all of these, because you could see when Jerry Jones was talking to the head athletic trainer about Dak Prescott's injury, it seemed like Jerry was just trying to find any angle where Dak could still be out there throwing footballs. Like, Dak Prescott's got a shoulder injury. They're trying like hell to convince Dak Prescott that he needs to take it easy. Hasn't played football in a year, and he's not supposed to throw at all. And Jerry Jones is on the phone with the head athletic trainer saying, well, could he throw it short at least? And you know, he's just thinking, yeah, we got 10,000 fans out there at Oxnard. We gotta show them something.
Yeah, he's beyond detached at this point. I mean, it's just unbelievable the bubble that guy lives in. But I was surprised, for as cynical as I go into watching these shows, that I was invested in Dak Prescott. I mean, I was interested in what was going on with him. I wanted to see how he came back, not just from the injury, but the stuff that was going on in his own personal life and his brother passing and the drama that is the Dallas Cowboys inherently. I wanted to see it. Well, it was interesting.
To set the scene, they start off with Dak Prescott, and I'd kind of forgotten the timeline too. It was last summer his brother died by suicide, and then Dak goes on, gets injured early in the year with a really gruesome ankle injury, and obviously he ends up out for the year after that. And they show the injury, which I was a little peeved at. I didn't expect in the first 90 seconds of the show to see the injury three different times.
Right.
Yeah, same. But and then you see him during the first few days of practice. You can tell he wants to get back out there. They're trying to limit him. They're using this GPS data that all the teams use now to show that he's exerting himself too much. And he's seething about the fact that he can't be out there. And the one thing that actually surprised me a little bit was he was actually super sensitive about anybody teasing him about not being out there. Like, he needed to make his point that no, I want to be out there. They're not letting me be out there. The backup quarterback messed with him a little bit. And I felt bad for that kid, because I feel like he'll probably get cut within 2 weeks because Dak didn't like being teased by the backup quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. He's definitely going to have him killed in the next couple games. Like, it was interesting. I thought I was invested in not just his whole energy and how much he wanted to be out there. I found myself a little surprised, even at a guy like Zeke Elliott, who I'm not generally a fan of, overall, just as a guy. I don't think I'd want to be on a team. I'd struggle with guys like that.
Yeah.
Even though he's obviously a premier talent. But I was still totally invested in just how much those guys seemed like they really wanted to play. They wanted to be out there. I mean, even Parsons wanted to be out there the entire preseason game. He wanted to be out there performing. And it surprised me how invested in that I was. I liked seeing that.
So let's start with Micah Parsons. We'll go over the main characters here a little bit. Micah Parsons, their pick out of Penn State. It's a young guy who came on from his redshirt freshman year to his sophomore year, really poured it on. And he's just, I mean, you can tell just from the first few clips you see in Hard Knocks. And that, I remember learning about him during the draft and everything. But man, this kid, he doesn't move like a linebacker. No. He looks like a safety out there, like in a good one at that. So, and he's kind of innocent in a way. He just wants to go out and play football and eat food. Those are his two main joys in life. That was seemingly what you'd get from this episode. He's hungry all the time, literally and metaphorically, and he just wants to play football because he gets really upset when the defensive coordinator pulls him early in the game.
Yeah. The theme of that episode, I felt like, was ignorance is bliss. Like, Jerry Jones brought it up. He just said, oh no, you have to just lie to yourself. Basically just lie to yourself and tell yourself,
call me naive.
Yeah. People call me naive, and that sounds a little ridiculous, but it's so true. I mean, it's true if you're going to make it in something that is such a long shot, like professional sports. And that's what that kid has right there, which totally is an asset, especially early on. It is an asset. I mean, he's not thinking about it. He's just going, he doesn't really care. He's not probably preoccupied with the fact that he's in Dallas of all places, and he's just performing.
Well, they're out there in Oxnard, California, and I've never been quite able to figure out what that place is, because they're living in dorms, but it looks like it's also up next to a housing development. And at the end, they show there's like an old lady standing up in her window in her house watching over the practice fields. It's a strange setting. It looks nice, beautiful. There's mountains all over the place, but it's a little bit of a strange setting.
It is really weird. I think it's got to be like at one of the UCs out there that they're staying at. I would think they're like trying at one of those because there's like one every 2 miles, you know.
That's right. You're a California guy. You know about the UCs.
Yeah.
So Micah Parsons, extremely athletic. I think like he's the jackknife. I get sometimes skeptical of these guys who are so incredibly athletic, but you never quite know exactly how good they are at football. You know, Penn State even looked, he looked raw, like he'd overrun plays. He didn't always take the best angles, but he was just so athletic. The guy that I always think of is Deion Jordan. I don't know if you remember him. He got drafted to the Dolphins out of Oregon. And it was always, the scouting report was like, he can line up anywhere on the field. He can play slot corner. but he's not going to do it well. But there's something about that versatility that people get super excited about. So I like this kid. He seems to genuinely enjoy playing football. I hope they give him the chance to just actually specialize in something at first. You know, like give him one role, let him get good at that. I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but Mario Williams was the same type of freak athlete, a bigger type of freak athlete, but they tried that with him his rookie year. They're like, oh, wow, we can play him down at defensive tackle. He can play left end. He can play right end. And after a while, they realized, oh, wait a second. Let's let him settle in at right end and learn how to do that before we start flooding him with all these other responsibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just put the guy in a position to be successful and just let him dominate against other people that really can't stand up to that kind of athleticism.
Mike McCarthy, I'm going to tell you, honestly, I was a little bit disappointed because I'd heard a lot of chatter just on ESPN shows or on social media, a lot of debate about people talking about Mike McCarthy and whether they should be body shaming him or not and talking about how fat he looks. I was a little disappointed because, frankly, like if anything, I think he might have slimmed down a little bit. He'd gotten pretty sloppy and bad last year. He's got a beard now, which makes him a little bit like he looks a little bit like Rip from Yellowstone. So I think he's a little bit sexier maybe than he was last year. Back when he's got a face that probably needs to be cloaked a little bit with a beard. And so I was a little bit of disappointed that he wasn't just gigantic the way he'd been portrayed on television.
Like morbidly COVID obese. Yeah, well, I think
Skip Bayless got into it with his co-host. I forget her name, the moderator there, because she didn't like that Skip Bayless was body shaming Mike McCarthy. And I thought that, you know, whatever body shaming people are doing of Mike McCarthy at this moment is probably pretty run-of-the-mill football body shaming. Like, he's going to make when you're that chubby as a coach around a football team, you make fun of yourself as much as anybody else makes fun of you.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that you do. Otherwise, like, you're going to be in for it. It's pretty hard to shame others when you're not at least, like, you know, defaming yourself to some extent. It's weird because to pick him of all people, like, he was pretty grotesque for a minute there, but he's not as on the scale of disgusting NFL coaches. He's not really like in the top 10.
He's not.
So it's kind of funny they picked him.
Andy Reid at his worst, or either of the Ryan brothers, Rex or Rob Ryan at their worst. Like, those guys are big.
Right.
Offensive line coach from Cleveland. Like, those are genuinely rotund people. Like, they're spherical almost. Where McCarthy just looks like an offensive lineman that maybe let himself go a little bit.
Yeah, he doesn't need like an extender when he gets on a plane. You know, some of those other guys, like they're in a bad spot. And also, it's kind of weird because like we used to fat shame each other all the time. I mean, you shame each other for everything. So it's not so bad. I mean, I am disappointed. I also think like the beard trend has done a lot of guys' favors. I mean, that trend has really worked out nicely for traditionally unattractive dudes.
That's, as I say here, you know, speaking to you with about 2 weeks of growth, I have to agree. And if there's one thing I've learned in life, it's like when I want to get in shape for the season, like now that I do broadcasting, I do two things. I stop lifting weights because then I fit in my suits, whether I lose fat or not. And I grow a little bit of a scruff because then, you know, if you get caught in any weird camera angle, it disguises, it cloaks you.
Yeah, it's not a visual medium, but I was going to say, I was trying to understand why you look so good today. And I guess that was it.
Oh, you've hidden more of your face, I see.
You're covering more of yourself up, and I like it.
I'm going to come on next week wearing a burqa. Like, yeah, something about you. You got this mysterious quality, Seth.
Yeah, Seth, you're so political.
Quality.
Yeah, so mysterious. I can't figure it out.
McCarthy made a really good point, and one thing that brought me back to training camp and gave me some like first person memories of it was the first day they were in pads. He was remarking to, I think it was Fossil, the offensive coordinator, that oh wow, it really is quiet on the first day of pads. Everybody's focused. The rookies are all a little bit nervous. Usually the rookies are talking too much on a day-to-day basis, and then on the first day of pads, all of a sudden they're not so cocky and bold and brash. They get a little bit serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely true. There's nothing like it. I mean, especially because no one really wants to be the one to. I always felt like it was you're waiting for the other guy to be the one to dial it up.
Yeah.
And so you don't really want to necessarily make yourself look terrible trying to go all in.
That is a good point, because one of the hard things about transition into the NFL is learning how to practice properly, mm-hmm. like go hard, but without going to the ground and everything. Where in college, you're beating up on the scout team so much of the time that you get to kind of be a bluto and just bully people.
Right.
Where the NFL, it's like, yeah, you got to go hard, but if you go too hard, you're genuinely going to, like, you're going to piss off the coaches. It's not just like you're going to piss off the old veteran or something. It's just, so you got to really learn how to play hard, but with balance and everything. I forgot about that. And that is a little bit stressful. Like,
biggest transition is because you're faced with the prospect of trying to understand that you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt, or you're not going to get the kudos for going so hard or so aggressively. You're actually going to get yelled at.
Yeah.
And that's a different speed. I mean, it's, you know, whereas you can make mistakes, but you can be going full speed when you're at the college level, and you're still usually going to kind of get, like, you know, a gold star from someone. And that is not a thing in the
NFL. I remember Gary Walker and I both got in a fight with this one young player, this one young offensive lineman one day, like, when we were just sick of this kid, because he'd been, you know, as he would charge out with his head down and do all this stuff that you can get away with when guys are trying to stay on their feet. So, like, mm-hmm. if an offensive lineman does that to you in the game, I'm dumping him on his face and I'm, you know, making a play. But you're trying to practice carefully and not go to the ground and everything. And this guy's, like, holding you after you beat him, like, doing all this stuff. So Gary Walker and I both got in fights with him. And it was funny because Coughlin called us all into his office. And that's exactly what happened. Coughlin ends up yelling at this guy for basically going too hard. But it's going too hard in a way where you're trying to get accolades or draw attention for doing stuff that you couldn't get away with doing in a game. So it's like cheating almost. And that's what really pisses off defensive linemen. Likewise, offensive linemen can do it. If a guy's like bull rushing and no pads or something, if a defensive player is bull rushing and no pads, then all of a sudden the offensive lineman looks like a tool because he wasn't like ready for a bull rush.
Well, for sure, your first year, you're still in that unconsciously incompetent phase, especially the line play. And I don't think it shows up nearly as much, in my opinion, when they're doing, you know, 7-on-7 and you have the skill guys going, because running routes is running routes to some extent. They're not going to do, maybe there's slightly more or less hand fighting or stuff, you know, when they're playing press. But otherwise, it's really in the box where you haven't quite figured out where the fits are, how that works. And so, especially the offensive line play, you don't really know what the defensive lineman can or can't do in a game until way later. And it's all that hand fighting stuff. And then realizing if this guy wanted to dump me, he probably could have.
Yeah, that's true. Like, cause you're still using the old habits and the stuff you got away with. Cause you used to be able to just maul people in college. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like going from fighting nothing, but it's like if you went from fighting just like backyard brawler types, like fist fights in your neighborhoods, to all of a sudden fighting an MMA champion who's a good striker or something. Like, you're going to get tapped three times in the face before you even know what happened. And that is, like, a lot of the really good offensive linemen, when all of a sudden they really dial it up and know exactly what you want to do and everything, they take your hands away from you. They make it absolutely useless.
I agree. I could have kept going with more anecdotes, but
no. There was something. There was actually something else that I forgot about as I was rambling on talking about that. Because gosh, I remember. Yeah, whatever. So the one thing that is, I'm watching this episode, you and I had talked about something a couple weeks ago, and it sparked in my brain, and it was as I was watching Micah Parsons and thinking, okay, like how versatile are they going to try to make this guy be? And is it going to be that kind of a theme this year for the Cowboys where they're, oh, everybody's versatile, everybody's doing anything. And you thought that spoke to something like a larger trend in society where there's just, it doesn't seem like there's as much of a demand for actual experts as there used to be.
Yes, I agree with that. We're tying in the lack of specialization for Micah Parsons into the entirety of American culture right now.
Yes. The Cowboys, just as the Cowboys are indicative of a lot of ills in society, this is one of them. The Cowboys are, they care too much about their social media clicks, and yes. They're trying to kill experts. They don't want any experts anymore. They just want a bunch of generalists out there.
Well, it's the double-edged sword, because it's the same thing, especially, you know, more broadly when you're getting into like sports analysis or anything else. It's great that it becomes so accessible that so many people can have an opinion and understand it. They can become more relatable, and they can also, I think you've seen how the veil has been pulled back. One of the things that was a complete disillusioning moment for me, and I don't know if you had this experience in Houston, but I did when I got there, is that I couldn't believe how unsophisticated our offense was and how the entire process was. I mean, it was far less complicated, way less sophisticated than my college scheme.
Really, was it?
Oh yeah. And granted, you know, Dirk Cutter was my coach in college, and he ended up, you know, developing a reputation for being a bit of a savant kind of coordinator guy, but still, you know. And so I think people would be kind of shocked to realize that, like, it's really just, it's not that complicated in a lot of ways. And then in others, depending on where you are, it is far more technical, far more difficult to master, and all those things in other ways. It's just sort of it's a confusing foray into both of those things. And it's the same thing when you're trying to explain football to people who maybe aren't overly familiar, or other coaches. It's just not that complicated sometimes to do the things that can make a team good.
Yeah.
And then on the other end, it takes decades to master. And it's the same thing to do, to be really proficient at something, whether you're a broadcaster or an analyst or whatever it is. So all these things, you know, it's hard to strike that balance between.
Oh, yeah.
And it drives me insane when people try to minimize the mastery level.
You know, and even if it is that sometimes people talk about a simple offense or a simple defense, and they do a disservice to how much complexity there is within the simplicity. Like, exactly. You know what? You sent me that gif of Tim Tebow trying to wham block that defensive lineman. And he got in the guy's way, I suppose, but the defensive lineman, without getting too technical, the defensive lineman did what he was supposed to do in that play. He's supposed to wrong arm. He's supposed to basically bounce the play to the outside. And Tim Tebow is coming across the formation as a tight end / H-back, whatever he's doing there. And he's either supposed to try to blow that guy up or at least seal him. Tim Tebow just kind of limply runs into him and twirls to the ground and gets up and hits one of his own guys. It was one of the biggest limp penis moments I've seen out of a guy trying to block somebody in the NFL. It was a really bad look for Tim Tebow.
It's hilarious. And it's both completely unfair to judge anybody by one play like that.
Right. Right.
Throw him under the bus. Right. I mean, I wouldn't want my most embarrassing play to be the thing that I would be judged on either.
Right? Tebow might have been awesome the rest of the game, but in that moment, it's that right there, like that actual block and how to react to it, both as a defensive player and an offensive player, is one of those moments where it's incredibly simple, and yet it happens at closing speed. Both guys are moving full speed a lot of the times, and there's a whole lot of nuance to it. Like the defensive lineman has to figure out whether Tebow's trying to kick him out or log block him, you know, seal him in. Likewise, Tim Tebow's got to figure out what's happening with the defensive end. And that's precisely one of those moments where it seems simple. And especially like when I watch a lot of people sometimes analyze film and you know, ask like, well, how could this defensive end not read this option play? Because it's fucking fast and it's happening really, really, it's by yeah. really large humans who are trying to physically maim you. Like, that's why it's fast. And there's a difference between watching it on film from above and seeing it at field level. So it's just, so those little simple things, sometimes a game can hinge on just how, if a guy is making a decision in 3 milliseconds versus 8 milliseconds. It's well, just that hard. Yeah.
And all those things are never happening in a vacuum. They're not happening in the 13 second clip that you're watching. Yeah. They're happening within the context of the entire game and the information that that player is holding on to from the previous 20 plays. So they're trying to anticipate based on a handful of other things that are happening leading up to that moment. And so you're not seeing, hey, here comes what's probably going to be this just in that one play. You're seeing the outcome of all the things he was considering before that play happened and how they're reacting to it. So it's completely, I mean, a lot of the highlights that you see, maybe they've gotten better over the years, but especially, you know, on like the offense defensive line, a lot of those plays where you see like an O-lineman just getting like completely smoked or a D-lineman getting thrown out of the bar. It's 90% of the time, it's because he took the exact wrong step at the exact wrong time. And he just got completely off balance. And that's how that happens. It's not because he's literally picking the guy up and throwing him out. Like that just almost never is a thing.
Anyway. Yeah, it's there's no, and it happens to everybody too. Like there are no virgins, like including Tim Tebow, who now is both literally and figuratively not a virgin. I would assume he's been married a few years. He probably got over his bashfulness and they've done it by now.
Yeah, he's acknowledged that he has to.
Yeah. Like, I guess it's in the Bible. I guess
I gotta do this.
I guess I have to do this. Like in that play, you can see him thinking about it. And it is, it's one of the hardest. It can be one of the hardest blocks for a tight end or a fullback to make. But that also goes to show that, look, making the transition from quarterback to tight end is, or tight or quarterback to fullback, like it's not as simple as, hey, this guy's pretty athletic, he'll probably be pretty good at it. Might as well be a basketball player making the transition to football, you know, like, and guys do that. They do it successfully. It's just, there's way more to it than just being able to run and throw and catch.
Yeah, so much so that it almost seems like he shouldn't be able to do it at all or be there.
I don't know. I've come around on that. Like Urban Meyer is doing something with that camp where like he preaches competition, and a lot of coaches do and say that, but he actually like follows through on it. They keep track of every drill. There's scorecards up there. They announce the winners in one-on-one special teams drills, like all this stuff that's actually pretty cool. And I asked Bradley Roby about it. I was like, hey, do you think Urban Meyer is going to change it all for because he played for him in college. Is he going to change it all for pro guys coaching men versus coaching boys? He said, no. He is who he is, and it's worked really well for him, and he's just going to be him. And I think they probably have that type of team in Jacksonville right now where, you know, like, okay, who are the stud prima donnas and for the Jaguars that are going to bristle against being coached hard by Urban Meyer? They aren't there.
It's going to be, I mean, that whole element of the cultural shift in bringing his mode from college to the NFL is going to be super interesting. I mean, I can't wait to see how that case study pans out. Specific to Tebow, if they were allowed to have 150 guys on a roster and just let it shake out that way, and you have the full, then I would be totally on board with it. The only issue that I have with it, and this is maybe an insider's view, I guess, is that I struggle knowing that somewhere there was a guy in a college roster who was a skilled tight end who absolutely was good enough to play, should have had a spot somewhere. And instead, Tim Tebow's getting that spot who already had his opportunity to play in the NFL and did, and we know what he can do, and that's the end of that. Like, that's where I'm just like, I don't see how that's at all. It's football should be a meritocracy in my view. And so
when the myth of Tebow never quitting and all that is – That's full of holes too. Like, he could have gone and played in Canada and taken a chance there or something, or tried one of those other leagues. He tried to play baseball, which is fine. I mean, Russell Wilson's a failed baseball player, you know, who decided to play football. It's not like it's the worst thing in the world. It's just that the myth building around him gets annoying at times.
Yes, at times, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess, you know what I would say? I would agree with you about taking up a roster spot. Like, okay, look, they're taking up the roster spot of a guy who wouldn't have made the team anyway, most likely, but at least the guy would have had a chance. The Texans have a guy right like that right now, and it, like Jeff Driscoll, who's the second/third string quarterback, who's just been absolutely atrocious every single day. I've been out at every practice except for one, and he's just been horrendous. Like, throws some of the most god-awful picks you've ever seen, and he's still out there. And the only thing I can figure is that the new character coach, who's buddies with Jack Easterby, the mysterious figure at the top of the Texans, was in Detroit at the same time Jeff Driscoll was, and that maybe there's a little bit of the old fellowship going on there. But it doesn't make any sense. Like, if it's going to drive me insane if this guy's still on the roster. If the Texans keep three quarterbacks and one of them is Jeff Driscoll, it's absolutely unforgivable. I've never seen. I don't know if I've ever seen a person have as bad a camp as Jeff Driscoll is having, including guys that definitely shouldn't be in the NFL at all. It's really weird. It's really, really weird.
It is maddening, especially in the dynamic where there's a guy who theoretically doesn't ever need to be there at all. Yeah. In a third string quarterback. No, it's exactly. Just not a guy you need there.
If he's there, then it's either because he's a veteran QB who, you know, back like when we had Jeff Garcia or somebody on the team who's a veteran QB that is way past his prime. But man, if you need him to go in for two games, he knows what the hell he's doing. Or it's got to be a young guy with upside. And this guy's got none of those. But
have you considered how motivational he is and the kind of other intangibles that he's bringing to the table? Maybe
bringing culture to the table. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. Right. It brings a lot of culture.
All right. In terms of specialization, you made the suggestion that you never listen to podcasts that are more than a half hour long. And we've tried to keep these to a half hour and been successful, I think, once. I think today's the day where we're going to stop. We're going to stop right now. Goodbye, Drew. Good job.
Look at that. We did it.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.